Welcome to Changemaker with founder of Gypsy Tea and social entrepreneur Zina Muzika.
This new podcast is to help you embrace change and experience amazing people and entrepreneurs. We're going to be sharing secrets, habits, and change-making abilities with you so that you can apply them to your life and make a life of your dreams.
This is Changemaker with Zina Muzika.
Hello, and welcome to the very first episode of Changemaker with Zina Muzika. I'm your host, Zina Muzika, and I am here to help you embrace change and make positive changes in your life. I have a very special guest for the Virgin Show, and her name is Rhonda Britton. We are part of a mastermind together, which we'll be talking about. But Rhonda is an Emmy Award winner, repeat Oprah guest. I mean, most people dream of getting on Oprah once. She's a repeat guest. And she has changed lives in over 600 episodes of reality television, is the author of 4 bestsellers, including her worldwide hit, Fearless Living, and is the founder of the Fearless Living Institute. Rhonda, welcome to Changemaker.
Thank you, Zina. I'm so excited to be here for your first Virgin Show. I feel so blessed.
Well, thank you for making it happen right before the holidays and changing your schedule to be here. It means the world to me.
Absolutely.
And so let's talk change.
Let's do it.
Okay. So, you know, change actually means that something must be not perfect in your life, right?
Yeah.
Because if there is no change, that means that everything's going great. Well, a lot of people resist change. Talk about your first experience with change and how you decided to make it part of your vocation.
Oh, yeah. Change is a constant, right? Isn't that what they say, that there is, you know, change is the constant? So unless you learn how to master change, you really can't master life. And I absolutely had a huge change in that I had to heal, confront, face, get over, move through. You can say a million ways to Sunday, but I had to get beyond it because it kept me stuck for 20 years. And the change I'm referring to is moving through the healing of my parents. And when I was 14 years old, my parents were in the middle of a separation, and my father came over to take us out for Sunday brunch for Father's Day. Hadn't seen him for a while, so pretty excited. And my father comes in, come on, come on, because that's what dads do. And my sisters are fighting it out in the bathroom. We had one bathroom, about a, I don't know, 750 square foot house. And my mother and I start walking out with my dad. And my dad says to me, I'm going to go get my coat from the car. And this coat was a tan Naga hide leisure suit coat. I don't know if you remember, you know, my father in his polyester pants, his plaid shirt and his Naga hide coat was looking good, looking good, looking good. And we were going out to the fancy Douglas House Buffet Hotel. So I was pretty gosh darn excited. And so my dad goes to grab his coat from the car. Me and my mother start walking out. And out of the corner of my eye, I notice that my father doesn't have a coat in his hand, but he has a gun. And he starts screaming, "You made me do this. This is your fault. You made me do this." And he fires. Now, I'm 14 years old, and I just start screaming, "Dad, what are you doing? Dad, what are you doing? Stop!" And my dad cocks the gun, and he points it at me, and I absolutely believe I'm next. And he looks at me and blinks. I look at him and blink. And my mother, who already had one bullet fired at her and in her, notices my father with that gun in my face and screams out literally with her last breath, "No, don't." And my father, realizing my mother is still alive, takes that bullet intended for me and shoots my mother. And that bullet goes through my mother's abdomen, out her back, and lands into the car horn. And for the next 20 minutes, all I heard was, and then my father came running over right next to me, put the gun to his head, and fired. So within 2 minutes, I was the sole witness to my father murdering my mother and committing suicide in front of me. And I don't know how anybody else would respond or what would affect their life, but all I know is that I blame myself. I was the only one there that could have stopped it. I was the only one. I didn't do anything heroic. I didn't, you know, kick my father in the shins. I didn't grab the gun. I didn't wrestle him to the ground. I didn't jump in front of my mother, you know, take my life instead of hers. I just froze. And from that moment forward, for the next 20 years, if you would have met me, I would have had a smile on my face. I'm a straight A student, president of my class. I'm awesome, right? But inside, I knew there was something wrong with me. Like, there was something wrong with me. I was just absolutely not good enough. And so I proceeded to use alcohol and tried to kill myself 3 times. And it was that third suicide attempt when I really realized that I'm not dying and I've got to change my life because I can't keep going like this. I mean, it's been 20 years. And, you know, I had nightmares every night. I could go on and on. But when I got out of the psychiatric ward, oh, by the way, if they put you in a third suicide attempt, they do put you in for evaluation. Mm-hmm. And that third suicide attempt, I realized I'm not good at killing myself, not skilled at it, and I keep living. And I got to figure out another way.
And you were meant to be living. You had a sense that you were supposed to be here for something.
That I was supposed to be here. Now, when you're in the bottom of the pits and you can't imagine what you're here for, all I knew is that I wasn't dying and I had to figure this out. And, you know, during those 20 years, it's not like I sat by the sidelines. I'd read books, gone to workshops, gone to therapy. I'd done so many things to try to help myself. But I fundamentally still felt there was something wrong. So when I got home from the psychiatric ward, I realized nobody's coming to save me.
Yeah.
You know, I had to save myself. And I set about changing my life.
Okay, so I've heard you tell that story once before, and it leaves me speechless every time, just to see how vibrant and full of life and passion and how much you have dedicated every minute of every day in yes. service to others. What was the beginning of that healing process where you said, okay, I have to change? How did you, what was that change and how did you achieve it?
Well, I remember being home in my apartment all by myself and thinking, okay, how am I going to do this? Like, how do you change your life? Like, right? How do you change your life?
Well, and you had a seed of post-traumatic stress disorder
absolutely.
So deep.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I had no right to be happy. I mean, for 20 years, I believed that I didn't have a right to be happy because my mother was dead, you know? Wow. And so, and I think that many people carry that, you know, a parent dies or a loved one dies or a tragedy happens to them, maybe a divorce or, you know, rape or molestation, anything like that. And they actually believe that they can't be happy then. Like, that takes away their happiness. They, like, that's not possible for them anymore. And I absolutely believed to be happy was selfish, and it kind of spat on my mother's grave. That's how it really felt to me
who
inside.
Who am I to be happy?
Who am I to be happy when my poor mother's dead? I mean, who am I? Right? And I didn't save her. You have no right to be happy, Rhonda Britton.
Wow. So tell me that day when you were, you know, at the bottom
yes.
and you looked up and said, I have to change. What was the first step you took?
The very first step I took is I told myself, I have to go back to the beginning. I have to go back to kindergarten. And I got a calendar, and I actually still own this calendar today, a calendar, and I put it on my wall, and I put it between, you know, my bedroom and my little apartment here, so every time I walked in and out of my bedroom, I would see it. And I gave myself a gold star anytime I did something good, because I didn't believe that I had anything worth saving. So if I wasn't going to die, I had to see if I was even worth it. So I started putting gold stars on a calendar every day. And you know, like I said, I still have this calendar. And you see, like, got angry but didn't yell. You know, like,
that's beautiful.
I actually you know, felt needy and I didn't beg for, you know, it's just these little tiny moments. Like, they're not nothing big, but every single moment was just this moment of awareness where I had a choice and I could decide how to be. And after the end of that month, Zena, I had a calendar filled with gold stars, and I remember feeling like, oh my God, I'm not a bad person.
Yeah.
I'm really a good, I'm okay. You know, I've always known I had a pure heart. I think all people have pure hearts for the most part, you know. You know, I just think I looked at that thing and I had hope. You know, yeah. I had hope that it could be different now. I could change my life. Look, I could change my life.
And you had a visual representation mm-hmm. of the goodness. I'm a big fan of a book called The Diamond Cutter.
Mm-hmm.
And it's based on Buddhism, on the Diamond Sutra. And he talks about keeping a journal of your good deeds, or even a pocket of black pebbles and a pocket of white pebbles, and every time you have a good thought or a good deed, recording it.
That's
and he
right.
says you can't have success without that.
That's correct.
And you came up with this idea on your own.
That's right. Many years ago.
And so do you remember what that first good deed was? The very first star?
I think the very first star was that I didn't get angry at somebody, mm-hmm. you know, where I normally would have lashed out and mm-hmm. blamed them and said, you don't understand me. Mm-hmm. You know, I stopped, and I didn't do that. And that's a very powerful act. And I agree. I mean, I think one of the things that I did back then that I didn't know what I was doing, of course, is I did make visual and visceral exercises for me. Mm-hmm. You know, like I'd said, I'd been in workshops, I'd read books, I'd gone to therapy, but it didn't really bring it all together for me until I started doing some visceral, visual, creative ways to connect. And I actually think that's my gift. That's why I've done 600 episodes of television,
yeah.
is that I... I think because I changed my own life that way, it's like I can talk to somebody and I kind of get a hint of what kind of visual, some kind of craft, some kind of build, some yeah. kind of breakdown, some kind of something can change literally their perception of the world.
So let's now fast forward. And now, you know, you were basically a coach to people before coaching existed.
Yes.
Now it's a very common term, and half the people you meet at a Hollywood party are life coaches.
Yes, let's not go into that because
but we
they
really
weren't
know.
Trained.
Yeah, exactly. But the training and all of that. So tell me, we've got, you know, a few more minutes in this segment. How did you then take this healing that you went through and this calendar of gold stars and turn it into gold for others?
Well, let me just be honest. I wasn't thinking about anybody but myself, right? I was just trying to save my own life. And in actuality, I was embarrassed that I was doing this, you know? And I think that's also a hallmark of people when they're kind of striking out on their own and creating their own path is there's a level of embarrassment.
Absolutely.
How it started turning into other people is this couple at church followed me out of the parking lot, followed me out to my car in the parking lot and said, Rhonda, what are you doing? And I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm not doing anything. And they're like, no, something's different. You're different. What's going on? And I went, oh, nothing. Because I was embarrassed. I was humiliated. And they said, no, come on. What's going on? There is something you're like so different.
It was physically palpable.
It was physically palpable. They heard it out of my mouth. Like I was different. And so after a little prodding from them, I said, well, I'm making up these exercises. And they go, you're making up exercises? What kind of exercises? And now, mind you, I'm humiliated, right? Like, oh, I don't want to tell them my stupid little exercise.
Because you think they're still
in
kindergarten.
They're so stupid, right? And because I've created more than that. Now I've created a whole bunch, right?
Yeah.
And I'm doing, right?
Well, and people like me buy them.
Yeah. I know. It's
happily.
Awesome. It's awesome. But I didn't know this, right? I felt embarrassed. And so they're like, no, give us one. And I'm like, okay. And so I told them one, okay? The next week at church, they ran over to me and said, oh my God, it's changing our life. Do you have another one? And I went, what? Like, what?
So what's working for you is working for others.
I had no idea.
And what you were saying is that you had no plan to help others.
No.
You were simply trying to save your life.
Save myself.
But it's very a healer, heal thyself. you know, and seeing unhealthy doctors isn't really healthy, you know, I mean, so you practiced it on your own.
That's right.
And that's, you know, as an author, you know this too. We don't write books. We write books we need.
That's right.
To read ourselves. It's a sense of discovery. So change for you started in these baby steps. And then we're going to talk a little bit in the next segment about how you took that onto television and Oprah.
This is Changemaker with Zena Muzyka.
So Rhonda, you started with Gold Stars, which I have a 4-year-old and I can't tell you how effective they are for her to sleep in her own bed. She gets a star and it's a visual on her door. And every time she hits 3 or 4, I give her a prize. So I love that you were able to water the garden of your inner child and really nurture that. And that shows a lot about your nature. So tell me how you took these exercises and sharing them with people at church. What was the step after that? And how, you know, you're changing your life, you're changing theirs simultaneously. How did you go from there into being a coach and being on TV and
there
Oprah?
There was no such thing as coaches, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know, what were you called then?
What ended up happening is, you know, I belong to, you know, I've always been a personal development junkie. I've always been wanting to heal myself and help myself. So as I was doing this, you know, I belonged to a couple groups and, you know, I started my own work, changing my own life. And I owned at the time, I owned a publicity company, you know, a little tiny one woman, you know, I had a couple clients, you know.
So you're an entrepreneur.
I was an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
And I had a client that was a quote unquote coach, what we'd call a coach today. Mm-hmm. And I helped him build. Now, I don't know how I knew how to do this, but he was a one man show and I basically built him a workshop, you know, funnel. I basically, you know, had him write a book. I basically got him speaking gigs. And again, this was 20 plus years ago. Like this wasn't the
norm.
It was
your soul's code, obviously.
Yeah. It's like, I don't know how I know this. I just did it. And this is what's so funny is he would always say to me, you're going to be a better coach than me. And I'm like, I'm not going to be a coach. I don't want to hear people's problems all day. I mean, because that's what I, you know, because it was like, I'm dealing with my own life, right? Like, I don't know. He goes, Rhonda, you're going to be better than me. And so I got him a first speaking gig at what used to be the Learning Annex many, many years ago. And so it's his first speaking gig. I go with him. There's like, I don't know, 40 people in the room, which is pretty good at Learning Annex for a first time speaker. And so I walk in with him and I introduce him. I go, here you go, and welcome, you know, wonderful Paul Roth, his name is, and he's a brilliant genius. And he walks up, and he goes, welcome, and he runs out of the room. He runs out of the room. And I'm looking like, what just happened? And I go, excuse me, and I run after him. Well, he has food poisoning, and he is having you know what, and leave the bathroom.
Oh, no.
He goes, Rhonda, you're going to have to do this.
You're on.
And I'm like, what? And, you know, like talk about God intervention. And so I get up there and I'm like, so. And I teach a 2-hour class. And as I'm teaching, they're really resonating with me and they are just so curious and they ask me questions and they are completely fascinated. And
at this stage in the game, did anyone know your past?
No.
When did you feel that it was safe to come out with this intense story?
It came after a dare.
A dare
from a friend of mine who was a speaking coach, who was a friend of mine. And I had been speaking for, you know, so then the Paul happened. And then from him, I started actually having my own practice and coaching, moving forward, et cetera, getting training, et cetera. And I lost your question because I'm blonde.
No, not because you're blonde.
Because I'm cute?
Yeah. Well, because this is big. So
yeah.
So
it's like what?
The big question.
What?
I was terrified for anyone to find out that my son had been born with a birth defect and I was so irresponsible I didn't have insurance. I had thought everything was going to be perfect. I would have my son. I would live this wonderful hippie lifestyle in Ojai, California without electricity and running water because everything was perfect.
Yes, that's right.
And then he had his birth defect. I had to get him operations to save his life, had no insurance, humiliated, embarrassed, terrified for anyone to find that out.
Yes.
When I finally told someone,
it opened
the whole world of help for me in ways that were so unprecedented. I realized that the things we carry in shame are often the things that connect others to our hearts the most.
No secrets.
Yeah.
No secrets.
So something this big, I know we shocked our listeners by starting out with your happy bio being on Oprah and all that and four best-selling books. And then we took you guys into this tragedy. How did you take yourself back out into the light?
Well, I'll tell you how I started to tell my story. You know, it was a dare from a friend of mine who was a speaking coach at the time. So I started working with Paul, started having my own clients, et cetera, started, you know, doing my little thing. And I'd been speaking for about almost 2 years. And my friend goes, you need to tell your story. Now, mind you, I didn't tell my story in college. You know, high school, they knew because it was happened during high school.
Yeah.
But I went away to college and I was like, yes, nobody knows my story. So
you left it behind.
I left it behind, and which I didn't, of course. And I didn't tell anybody. You know, they would just, they'd be like, oh, your parents, like, oh, they're both passed. Oh, in an accident? I would say yes. You know, in my mind, I'd go, my father accidentally took the gun out and shot my mother. But I would never admit. I would be like, an accident.
Well, yes. Because you are the seed of your parents.
I am the daughter of a murderer. Right? You know, my father's DNA runs through me, and I was petrified that that would happen to me someday. Like, I would take a gun and start shooting people, or that my anger would destroy the world. I mean, because when you're holding things in like that, I've talked to so many people, they go, well, Rhonda, if I actually felt or actually expressed how I feel inside, I would destroy the world. And I look at them, I go, I know exactly what you mean. And they're like, no, you don't. I go, oh, yes, I do. I know exactly what you mean. So my friend Sarah said, you need to tell your story, when you're giving a talk. And I'm like, oh my God, this is going to be horrific. And so I basically dared her, you know, she dared me, and I basically bet her. I said, I promise you that nobody will care about my stupid story, right? So I had two speaking gigs back to back. I wore the same outfit, gave the same talk, wore the same hair, wore the same glasses, tried to make everything exactly the same so I could tell. So the first talk I gave without my story, you know, 3-5 people afterwards come up, ask for, you know, talk to me. You know, I didn't have a book at that time, but just to talk to me. And next couple days later, I do the same talk, but I add my story. When I got done speaking, there was a line around the block to talk to me, to buy I had cassette tapes back then, my cassette tapes. And I was blown away, and still am blown away to this day, that anybody cares. And I get that it's filled with hope, and I get that I've changed my life, and I get that's inspiring for people. And it still surprises me to this day, you know? But when I started telling my story out loud, it did unleash a freedom in me that I hadn't had previously. You know, it was like I could really show up in a more full way. And it was after that when I started teaching workshops in my home, because before then I was so embarrassed by my house. Like, oh, it's an old house, and I got broken tiles, and they're going to come in here and go, who wants to learn from this chick? You know, and nobody knew what coaching was yet.
Got it.
You know, so I was like this little girl, you know, in Los Angeles, California, you know, seriously, I know there was Thomas Leonard and me. Maybe there were five other coaches in the world. And I was like, Rhonda, is it more important for your house, or is it more important for you to share your message? You know, what you're here to do, what your mission is. And so I was really scared that first night that people showed up, but I did it anyway, and nobody cared, right? Could care less. Like, right, I could have had streaked hair, orange outfit on with red lipstick, with broken nails, chipped toenails.
But you had overcome the thing that sounds like it could never be overcome. So credential wise, there are no credentials or fancy houses or cars or hairstyles or nothing.
Yes.
Can be a bigger credential than overcoming what you overcame.
Thank you.
So I'm tempted to keep going on, and then how did you get on TV? And then how did you do Oprah? And then how did you... But I actually want to go a little bit more into the nitty-gritty of a couple practices for our listeners on making change within themselves. And, you know, what do you mean by fearless living? And let's talk a little bit about what we can give to our listeners so that they can apply it today in their life.
Absolutely.
And get their own calendar of gold stars for themselves going.
How wonderful that is, right? How beautiful that would be. And, you know, fearless living for me is not about jumping out of a plane. It's about jumping into life. Mm-hmm. It's because for me, what fear is fear is just an affirmation of your growth. Fear just comes up when you're walking into the unknown. And fears has a job, though. It has a beautiful job, and it loves you. I do believe fear loves you. And so it's nothing to quote-unquote fear. It just has a job. You know, just like love has a job, fear has a job. Mm-hmm. And fear's job is to keep you safe.
Totally.
You know, the problem with fear is that it still thinks you're five, you know? It still thinks you're two. It still thinks you're eight. And just like a child, you have to train fear. And once you train fear and it trusts you because you trust you, it kind of backs off in many ways. But I do want to correct a fallacy out there. You know, if you ever hear somebody say, you know, get rid of your fear, or, you know, just, you don't have to have any fear. Just it's, I don't have any fear. It's like, if I meet a person that doesn't have any fear, I say, did you have a lobotomy? Because fear is part of our biology. It's in our amygdala, right? So it is not about not feeling afraid. It is about having a relationship with fear that is so different that you get gold from it, like you glean its wisdom from it, right? And so you're not getting rid of fear. So
it's a teacher.
It's a total teacher.
So do you believe fear is the opposite of love?
I actually don't.
That's never sat well with me.
No, I don't.
I know it's like from, you know, the Course in Miracles. So,
and I do believe that there's two, you know, we can say two basic emotions, fear and love. I can get behind that. But fear and love opposites? No. And I actually think fear uses opposites to trick us. So, you know, most personal development self-help people say, well, if you're afraid to be a loser, be a winner. Right? If you're afraid
so
to be lazy, right? But that's what they say, right? Because that's their level of awareness, right? And if you try to be a winner, if you're afraid to be a loser, you're actually becoming a winner out of fear, and it is going to get you, because when you act from fear, you will have fear-based results. So, you know, my thing is, I know most people, many people don't say, I'm afraid, right? The first thing I have to do when I talk to people is they go, I don't have any fear. I go, awesome. That's awesome. I say, can I give you the little fear quiz? And they're like, okay, because I'm not afraid. I go, awesome. That's so awesome. Great. I'm so happy for you, because I know most people don't walk around going, I'm afraid or I'm scared. They just don't. That's not what we do every day, right? But we do say this. We say, I'm worried.
Yeah.
We say, I have regret. We say, I have disappointment. We say, I'm overwhelmed. Right? We say, I feel inadequate. You know, we say, I don't feel good enough. I'm not good enough. I'm not good enough for a man. I'm not good enough for a woman. I'm not good enough for this job. I'm not good enough for this business. I'm not good enough for this raise. I'm not good enough. Right? So fear uses worry and overwhelm and procrastination and perfectionism and all those things. Those are just symptoms of what I call your core fear. So worry, you don't have worry unless you have a fear, right? You don't get overwhelmed unless there's a fear underneath it.
Absolutely.
You don't feel inadequate unless you have a fear underneath it. So most people go to therapy and self-help and coaches like myself and workshops, et cetera, because of symptoms. I want to quit being a perfectionist. And you're going to get great tools. Awesome, awesome, awesome. Do it, do it, do it. And it's only going to find another source to pop up in, because, you know, have you ever like solved one problem and another problem pops
Absolutely.
Up?
Absolutely.
Right?
What's that little machine where you're hitting the little
kids machine?
Yeah.
It's like one thing pops up, right?
Absolutely.
So because fear will do that. If you don't address the fear itself, it'll just pop up different circumstances, just different situations. So you get rid of your perfectionism. Awesome. That's great. But oh, by the way, now you're starting to worry or get jealous.
Well, it's like a bad diet. It's like you lose the weight for a little bit and then you gain the weight back and then you lose it and then you gain it. I mean, so tell me, so granted, we all have fear.
Yes.
How do we befriend that fear and help it to work for us?
Yes. So I'm going to give a couple exercises that you can start doing right now just to start building a different relationship with yourself. Because truly, what I want you to really embrace is your innocence. You know, the more you see yourself as innocent, the more you embrace your humanity, and fear can't get a hold of you in the same way it had in the past. So there are two exercises I give every client I work with. You hear them in every workshop I teach because they're so fundamental to our self-esteem, our self-confidence, just who we are as people. And it is called gratitudes and acknowledgments, right?
Yeah.
And most of us know what gratitudes are. We've heard it before, but I kind of do a little different spin on it.
Oh, good. Because we've heard the gratitude thing.
Oh, yeah.
Thing.
Because we've all heard, count your blessings. It's like, okay.
Keep a gratitude journal.
Okay, that's awesome.
Say
again.
Thank you seven times. Yeah, I do that one all the time.
Again, which is great and wonderful. I want you to do that. Like, that's lovely, right?
But
I really want you to gain the power of the gratitude and the power of the acknowledgement, not just do it as like a nice exercise. Actually, it's like power.
Yeah.
Because if you do gratitudes well, it actually shifts your perception of the world.
Absolutely.
Okay? So think about the last time you complained. Okay? So every time you complain, you must turn it into a gratitude. Okay. And I want you to write it out like this. Today, I'm grateful for. Now, another rule of my gratitudes is gratitudes aren't about you. They're about someone or something else, not you.
Absolutely.
So it's like, you know, somebody cuts you off in traffic. Right. And, you know, we can be like, I've got to traffic.
Especially
thank you
here for not
LA.
Crashing into me.
Yeah. I'm so grateful because of the way you swerved. It's made me more awake and aware to driving. Thank you so much. I'm so grateful for you. I love you, car. I love you, driver. Thank you. Right.
Okay. That is probably a little much.
But I'm telling you, if you do it. It's so amazing how subtly we complain on just a subtle level.
Absolutely.
We don't do it out loud. We just kind of grumble. But if any time you catch yourself grumbling, putting down, judging another person and have to turn it into gratitude, that is a practice from moving into a world that's against you to a world that's for you.
Agreed. And I talk about a lot with my clients and in my
yes.
world is that, you know, if you're in a bad mood, all you'll see are the negatives
yes.
and you have to consciously shift it.
Or do something super fun.
Yeah, and that's true. I mean, fun, like disciplining my 4-year-old is the least fun thing on the planet for me. I mean, it's so hard for me to say, you know, to put rules on this wily little soul that
yes.
and so I'm wondering so if I'm feeling a complaint, like with Mia, for instance.
Yes.
And I'm doing this for the audience and also for myself. So Mia, no, I said 2 books, not 5. Or mm-hmm. no, I said 1 My Little Pony, not 10.
I am so grateful for your curiosity. I'm so grateful for your curiosity mm. and your interest in the world. Like you just have such a thirst for knowledge.
Mm.
I love that about you. And it's 2 books. Right? I love that you have the thirst for knowledge and it's
you,
2 books,
thank
right?
You. That's such a great, yeah.
Like again, it's the power of the language.
Absolutely.
It's, you know, staying in the empowerment. You know, one of the things that I use and I train my coaches to use is that empowering or disempowering?
Yeah.
I don't say, is it negative or positive? Because I think positive thinking can only get you so far. And I actually think positive thinking can be a detriment.
Absolutely.
You know, so I believe in empowering and disempowering, right?
Great.
So, you know, how can you use the same How can you make the same request in an empowering way versus a disempowering way?
It's beautiful.
And that's an art. And that's our job, right?
Fantastic.
And then I wanted to give that fun exercise. And then I have one more if you'd like one.
Yeah, but we'll do the second one after
perfect.
Our little break.
Perfect.
Yeah,
perfect.
Great.
So I'll do the fun one now because we talked about fun. So this is a really fun one. So let's say you're really mad, right? And you have like no positivity in you at all. You don't feel empowered at all. And you are just really mad, right? And you are stomping around the house really mad. But you do have the awareness that you want to shift your state, right? So instead of going, I can't believe this guy, who do they think they are? you do that. You still use the energy. You still go like this, except you say, God, my life is so good. Ah, I am so abundant. My life is so amazing. Ah, right? So you use the energy, because that's the thing. People cut off their energy with their feelings, and then they don't have their feelings accessible to them.
And that's probably where most disease comes from.
You name it. Absolutely. So it's about, okay, use that energy on your behalf, mm-hmm. and use words that really empower you, and of course, end up making you laugh.
I love it. So we are going to take a super quick little break, and then we will come back with that second exercise.
There are lots of things you can spend your tax refund on, but one thing you don't have to spend it on? A new smartphone. Switch to MetroPCS now and get not one, but two free 4G LTE smartphones for brands like Samsung and LG. Plus, you're on T-Mobile's blazing fast nationwide 4G LTE network. Hurry, switch to MetroPCS and get two free smartphones after instant rebate. One heck of a deal, only at MetroPCS. Limited time offer. Sales tax not included in phone price. Coverage and services not available everywhere. See store for details and terms and conditions.
Looking to get the best deals at your favorite stores? CVS Local Circulars has you covered with access to the hottest sales around, from electronic stores to baby stores and everything in between. Go to circulars.cvslocal.com today to get great deals from retailers like Target and Macy's. This is Changemaker with Zena Musica.
Okay, exercise number two. The first one's really fun. I could totally see myself doing that. I'm very passionate, being of gypsy heritage, and have a lot of fire in me. So being able to still express the passion, but to shift it into making it empowered versus disempowering to me. Because I always feel, whenever I get frustrated with something afterward, because I do meditate and I do have a practice, and I've dedicated my life to living in a empowered way.
Yes.
But I always do feel, after I'm angry or upset, that I lost control somehow. Mm. And granted, we don't have that much control, but I always feel that, gosh, I've come so far. Why do I still allow myself to get riled up over something? And in Buddhism, they actually say to keep yourself beautiful and attractive, you have to learn to not become upset, not allow yourself to become upset over things. And every time I do get upset or angry, I feel ugly after.
Well, so this is where Buddhism, I love Buddhism. I've gone to meditation retreats for years.
We can
and
flip the
love
table
it.
On anything in
and,
this.
And, you know, this is what I know. I believe God, source, universe, whatever you want to call it, beloved, gave us a plethora of emotions to have an emotional life. Mm. And we wouldn't have apartheid without anger, mm-hmm. right? We wouldn't have so many of the things today that we have without anger. So I believe that every emotion that we have is to be honored. And what I always say is, what are you in service to? Are you in service? Are you going to use the anger in service to fear? Or are you going to use the anger in service to freedom, to your highest good, to the expression of who you're really meant to be, right? So you can be angry in fear, right? And blame and shame and complain and get bitter and judge, right? Or you can get that you're having a stifling, like you are maybe feeling jealous for a moment, or you are feeling judgmental for a moment. But that is only a signal that you are not expressing the fullness of who you really are. There is something that is being unseen and unsaid and unexpressed. So it's like, okay, wow, I'm having this anger move through me. And it's like, okay, go ahead, take a run, take a walk, go in the shower, beat a drum, you know, whatever you need to do. Do my exercise I shared with you. Get all that energy out. Because the energy has to move. Right?
Yeah.
The energy has to move.
Yeah.
But then you say to yourself, okay, now that I've gotten angry and this anger is here, what is it really telling me? What's the message? Well, when I get angry, the message is 99% of the time is, Rhonda, you are holding yourself back in some way to be your authentic self, and you're mad that somebody else isn't. Or you're mad that this person is like unconscious and walking around the world and just gets to do whatever they want. You're getting into your fairness thing. You know, I'm a daughter of three middle girls, right?
Got it.
So it's like the fairness thing. Oh, Rhonda, there's the fairness thing. That's your little hook, right?
Got it.
So, but it's educational. It supports me. It makes me go, oh, wow, I have grown so much. Oh, my gosh.
It sounds like a lot of work.
It's not, though. It happens in the moment.
So it's a split second awareness.
Oh, a split second awareness. It is so not work. It literally shifts you immediately, because in my anger, let's say I get angry, I also am having that third witness consciousness that's going, oh, wow, what's this about? Like, wow, how fascinating.
Absolutely.
Like, I'm fascinated by it. It's like, wow, what's she doing? Wow, what's going on over there?
I'm definitely curious. And so I wanted to ask you quickly, too, like, I know we have a second exercise that we'll get to, but I mean, we could talk for 60 million hours and not get through everything. You live in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
In the land of the beautiful.
Yes, yes.
In a place where ageism is so alive and kicking.
Yes, yes.
And plastic surgery and people who get the jobs. I mean, I got a facial a couple days ago for my birthday, and it was an oxygen facial. And the lady was saying, oh, yeah, now that there's HD television, we do these on set so that we can plump up actors' wrinkles before they go on set, because the television shows everything. And I thought, wow. I said, well, how long does it last? Well, it can last a few hours, or it can last up to 12 days. And I thought, well, and then what? I mean, it's, none of it is permanent. How do you bring fearless living into living in a place where everybody's so fearful of age and, yes, and their mortality?
I have a big job ahead of me. You know, I look forward to the day that I don't have a job, like nobody needs me. I'm going to be like, hot party. But, you know, right now, a lot of people need me. So, you know, age, again, is, you know, just a fear that we're going to be obsolete. You know,
yeah,
I mean, I have hit a milestone birthday and gone past that milestone birthday. And, you know, it was definitely something for me as well, just to come to terms with, you know, oh, wow, you know, like, oh, have I gotten everything I wanted done? You know, people talk about retirement or something. I don't even understand that concept, because when you're doing what you love, your life is your passion and
Absolutely.
Your mission. So, you know, the good news about me is I can be, you know, 80 years old and still do what I do today. Mm-hmm. So it's just an opportunity for people to get back to their center and get back to themselves, right? You know, if you're caught up in age, it just means that you're looking outside of yourself for approval, that you actually don't have the self-confidence, maybe the self-worth, the self esteem, you know, the self-value to actually get that you are valuable regardless of whether you have a wrinkle or not. You know, so we are not trained in our schools, in our society, or by most parents, to give our children value to be who they are, right? Just to be who they are. So we literally have had it beaten out of us, drained out of us. And we're literally just trying to find our way, because our greatest human need is to belong and connect.
Absolutely.
So we want to belong and connect. So when we're trying to have plastic surgery, we're kind of doing a fear-based way of belonging and connecting.
Yeah.
We just want to be wanted.
Absolutely.
And if we don't feel like we have value except our looks, well, then we got to keep it up. If that is my value to a man or to society or to another woman, if that's my value, then I got to put a lot of time in there.
Yeah.
So it really is where you think your value lies. And when you're worried about that value decreasing, you then lose your identity. Right. And that's the best news of all, by the way. I just went through Dark Night of the Soul, and dark nights are the most amazing, greatest gifts on the planet.
Absolutely.
And when you lose your identity, when you, you know, shift careers, or your children go to the empty nest, or, you know, you're at a decision point in your life, you know, the dark night is calling. And that dark night is to help you to get back to yourself. It's not ripping you away from everything you know. No, it's actually ripping away that things no longer serve you. And it's time to get back to you.
Beautiful.
The real you, the essence, why you're here.
Beautiful. I love that new definition of the dark night of the soul. And also, you know, the value, the fear of not being beautiful, the fear of not being is all a fear of not belonging and
yes.
not being loved.
Yes.
And it's a beautiful thing. So for our last few minutes together, let's talk about this second exercise on dealing with fear and befriending it.
Absolutely. I want to do something to help people build their self-esteem and self-confidence, because the only way to become fearless is to start taking more risks. But the only way to get more confidence is to take risks, right? So people always say to me, Rhonda, if I just had more confidence, I'd take risks. I go, no, you actually have to take risks to get confidence.
Got it.
Right? So what I want to do is give an exercise called acknowledgements. And I do, again, a very specific way for a reason. And there's a method to my madness. And I want you to write out, today I acknowledge myself for. And you're going to acknowledge yourself for, not anybody else, just yourself, for any movement forward. Any tiny thing you do. I call it stretch, risk, and die. And I'd be happy to give your listeners
some
a free exercise so they can go and watch some videos and learn some more. But acknowledgments. Today, I acknowledge myself for, let's say you do the stars and you recognize you complain 100 times a day. And you say, I got to quit complaining, you know, and so you keep track of your complaints and the next day you get it to 99. What do most people do? Oh my God, I'm still doing 99. No, what I do is I go, oh my God, I'm only 99. Today I acknowledge myself for 99 complaints. I'm amazing, right? Because you made movement forward. You know, when I got divorced, I gained a lot of weight, and to lose it, you know, one day I put tennis shoes on for the first time in 3 years. I acknowledge myself. I'm amazing, right? I drove by the gym and saw it. Acknowledge myself, right? I walked in and got the schedule. Amazing. Acknowledge myself, right? So you know, most people only acknowledge when they're done. I've lost the 20 pounds. I acknowledge myself. No. You take one bite of dessert when you normally want, well, at your birthday party the other day, Zena, right? It's like, I wanted to eat three pieces.
That was the best cake I've ever had.
And it was so thinly cut. Seriously. Okay. It was so thinly cut. I'm like, are you serious? I was married to an Italian. Okay. So like, are you kidding me? This is like a bite. So I wanted to eat three pieces because that's like a normal one piece, right? And so I said, okay, only one piece, you know, and it's like, I acknowledge myself, right?
And we weren't being stingy. There was just more people than we expected.
No, but it was beautiful. And that's the size most people want. I'm just, you know, I love chocolate
that.
Cake.
But what you said, I want to go back to something you said, because I think so many of us do it, and I know I do, is we only acknowledge when we're done.
That's so not right.
And that is where all of the discouragement comes in.
Because you can't build your confidence on that.
Well,
you can't
and you're
build
not
your
done,
confidence.
Obviously.
Yes.
Because you're not there.
That's right.
And are
That's
you
right.
ever done?
That's right. That's right. And notice I also didn't say acknowledge how well you did something. I didn't actually say that either. So I don't care how well you did it.
Got it.
I only care that you did it.
Got it.
So, you know, you go to the gym and you do 5 sit-ups and you really are sloppy and you sweated a lot and, you know, you burped halfway through. I don't care. You did it. Right. So it's not about how well, it's about if you did it. And it's not about how many times, it's about did you shift one thing.
I love it.
And when you start acknowledging yourself every day, 5 times a day, and I have a model called Stretch, Risk, and Die that I'll give to your listeners, that they can go watch videos to learn about this. Your confidence is going to soar.
I love it. So where can, and we'll have you back. I mean, I this was my first episode and I feel like my life is so much better and I appreciate you so much and acknowledge that, you know, you changed your schedule around to come and you know, do this with us on the first
Absolutely.
Time. So tell us, I know people can find you at rhondabritten.com. And that's
RHONDABRITTEN, rhondabritten.com.
Great.
And if you just go to rhondabritten.com and you can sign up for the 25 Tricks of Fear, is right there on the homepage.
Great.
And that changes on a regular basis, so you can always go back and find out what I'm giving away.
Great.
And if you want to go ahead and watch 3 videos and really learn about acknowledgements and stretch, risk, and die, and a little bit more about fear, it's 3 videos, they're about 12 minutes each. Mm-hmm. You can go to rhondabritten, rhondabritten.com/risk. That's RISK.
Great.
And go there, download the videos, watch them. And I'm knowing that they're going to give another little piece of this puzzle to help you become fearless.
I love it. Rhonda, thank you for the work you do in the world and for everything you've overcome.
Thank you.
You embody such a bright light and so much humor and grace. And I feel uplifted every time I see you. So thank you.
Thank you, Zena. I'm so grateful to be your first guest. Be fearless.
I love you.
There are lots of things you can spend your tax refund on, but one thing you don't have to spend it on? A new smartphone. Switch to MetroPCS now and get not one, but two free 4G LTE smartphones for brands like Samsung and LG. Plus, you're on T-Mobile's blazing fast nationwide 4G LTE network. Hurry, switch to Metro PCS and get two free smartphones after instant rebate. One heck of a deal, only at Metro PCS. Limited time offer. Sales tax not included in phone price. Coverage and services not available everywhere. See store for details and terms and conditions.